Sahanavavatu, Sahanavunatu, Sahaviryam karavavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
This is the one we didn't do yesterday. Can you recall and share with us the milestone moments, images, thoughts by which you had your aha moments and made yours the whole vision? Well, in terms of your relationship with Ishvara and being the whole, I think that's where the sun rises, the image they use in the Kathopanishad of the sun rising, the dawn comes first, and then slowly the sun rises. Because there's just so many aspects, there's so much to assimilate there, it's not just one thing, you know. So that is sun rising, so I don't have any particular aha moments, I just have hundreds of little ones, you know. But I guess the two that, and probably even for recognizing, you know, your own being, there's a lot of little ones also, but the two that always kind of stood out for me was one that happened actually really early on, maybe probably even be in the first year or two, even though I wouldn't, first year or two of being with Swamiji and being at the ashram in India. And it was a major aha moment, even though I mean, certainly the sun had not risen. But nevertheless, it was really important. And it was just one of those kind of unusual occurrences. I was walking down the path. This is at the ashram in Pauai, the Sun Deepening Sadhanalaya, where Swamiji taught his first course there in 1972. So I was walking down the ashram, walking down the path on my way to the Yajnashala where we had the classes. You know. And as I was walking, for just some reason, there's no way to explain it, it's just my mind became very absorbed for the moment. And I had the very clear experience of me, this is this me moment, that I was not walking. That I wasn't walking, I wasn't changing, nor was I even contained or attached. And it was absolutely clear. And then that's what I knew what Swamiji was talking about, when he was talking about the nature of myself, the truth of myself, because it was me. There was no question of it. But it was somehow just my mind was very subtle or whatever it was, and I saw that very clearly. So I haven't told you this story. Okay, well, it's really funny. Okay. So, then I'll make it really good. So, as soon as that happened, I stopped. And I didn't want to lose it. So I kind of stood there, kind of frozen, just recognizing, you know, that separation, that viveka that was just profoundly clear. And so then, now how am I going to move? Because I don't. So first I start like this. So I'm completely still, right? So. And so I'm still. Nothing was happening. It wasn't moving. So I was going. And then, I'm serious, you know. And it must look so ridiculous, but this is what it was, you know. And I was in. And then I went. And it was amazing because I was now starting to move my body and nothing was happening. That viveka wasn't going away. And so that was just huge, because it was so clear to me that myself was, the very self that I am, was free, had no attachment whatsoever. And so then I took some steps and I started walking toward the shala where we have the classes. And as I recall, I kind of kept it, but it started just then becoming just kind of a normal state. But it never became a normal state again, in the sense that this me that I had always identified with the body, I saw very clearly, wasn't. That never changed, because it is you, and it's the you you've always known to be you, and now all of a sudden you realize that you are free from what is mithya. Actually, you're completely free of it. And so you cannot forget that. You can have all kinds of like meditative experiences and this type of thing, and then when those are gone, they're gone, because they're an experience. And when the experience is there, it's there. When it goes, you have to recall it from memory. You know, these profound experiences, they go and they have an effect for some time, but they wear off because you don't really, the memory is gone, because it was a vritti, even though a very subtle vritti. But this is not a vritti, this is me. The very me that is here right now, I recognize that like I'm always harping on this when we're talking, that the one that you take to be this body, that is that one, it's not another. Well, that's the one that I recognize so clearly. And so that has never gone away. Then, though, this was early on, and so I had so much to learn and assimilate in terms of this body, mind, sense organs in reference to Ishwara, in reference to that self, and your raga dveshas, and all of this, these things that have to be worked through, because it was quite early on. But then I would say, quite some years later, Swamiji was coming to the States, and I was going back and forth in a way. I was in the States sometimes, and in India at other times. Back in the earlier days. But, you know, it must have been maybe 10 years later. All of a sudden, I had another one of these kind of unusually clear experiences, and I really don't remember why it occurred. But it's also what I'm always kind of teaching about, is that the ahankara, that I notion, kind of floated into my mind. It was like the ahankara was there. And then what happened, instead of it going toward an upadhi, it went to me. It landed on me. And in a way that was an aha moment. Because I don't really even think I thought that much about the actual ahankara landing. Instead of being ahankara, the I, or the me actually resolving into the self, instead of resolving into your thoughts or into what you're thinking about or into your body or just into the whole body-mind complex. I thought about it when class was going on, but I never really paid that much attention to it until this happened. And then what it was is that this I that is just automatically identifying with your body-mind sense organs went to me. And then that wasn't something that I had to go like this, you know. That's something that then I could keep seeing that, you know. And I saw it over and over and over again in many, many different ways. And then I think that was a big moment, you know, because I just realized that me, this, that who I am, was always there in exactly the same way, and it just became, I don't know, it just became so real. Whereas before, it was real in that Swamiji was always talking about it and unfolding it, and I was appreciating it. But that, what we call that aparoksha jnanam. Aparoksha jnanam means it is there. You just see it. And so, and that was something that never changed. These are kind of, if the ahankara lands on your body or your mind or your sense organs, you still have an ahankara, you still walk, you still talk, you still the word I still exists, but it's mithya. Your sense of me is not the body, mind, sense organs. It's me. You know? It's not that the body, mind, sense organs doesn't have a sense of self, because like the clay pot, you know, the pot totally enjoys and is totally dependent on the clay, completely. And your body, mind, sense organs is completely dependent on you. So much dependent and so much one with yourself that it automatically takes itself to be you. It doesn't say, until it's taught, it doesn't say, well, I'm Mitya, you know? And and I really have no existence apart from the Satyam self. It doesn't say that, doesn't even know what that means. You know, so that's something that has to be really understood. But when the body, mind, sense organs totally enjoys your being and you are completely free from your being, that's when that Satyam Mithya is real. And then what happens is that the ahankara itself, instead of landing in a real way on the body, mind, sense organs, it lands on them as mithya. It has the same order of reality as the body, mind, sense organs being mithya. And you are not mithya. You are Satyam. And so when you think of yourself not as mithya, but as the you that is there, that is changeless, is not objectifiable, it's just the me, that I'm always there in exactly the same way. And that is me. I'm not the me in the form of this body. The body enjoys me completely. So that remains the same. It's not like you get knowledge and then all of a sudden you're this non-dual Brahman and this poor body's out there all alone. That's not it at all. Where'd she go? Yeah, so that's not what it is. So you're still completely normal, except that you're a normal person. But you know that your own nature is aparoksha. It means it's absolutely clearly recognized. You are recognizable as yourself. That's why a lot of times when we're doing the meditations in the morning, now there's this subtle shift, just this very subtle shift of letting the buddhi focus on yourself, focus on you, then be yourself. It focuses on you, but then there's an identification can be with the buddhi that now is as though illumining you. Right? Now because the buddhi is focused on me, I am aware of myself. That's not what it is. Because the buddhi is focusing on you, your being becomes the subject matter of the vritti, of the buddhi vritti. Just like if I'm focusing on all of you, then this room becomes the subject matter, right, of the vritti. But when the same vritti, instead of focusing externally, outwardly, it's focusing on its own being, then your being fills that vritti. So that is the vritti experience there. But you're the one that is illumining that vritti, which is focused on you, right? And you are the conscious being because of which that vritti, which now is focused on the room, is known, and now is focusing on you, is known. So the thing is when the vritti focuses on you, and you are the one who is illumining the vritti, then that subject-object relationship kind of collapses because the subject of the vritti becomes like a mirror toward yourself, right? And then yourself is illumining it. And so the self is illumining the self, so the subject-object duality kind of collapses for that moment. But you need a subtle shift because you can have this sense that I am aware, I, the buddhi, am now aware of myself. And actually, there's something else to be seen. The buddhi is gently focused. And why I say gently focusing is so that you don't feel like you have to get rid of all your other experiences. The other experience, the mithya experiences, don't cover the self experience at all. So it's not like we have to focus so intently and I'm still hearing the birds and I'm hearing this as though that's a problem. It's not any sort of a problem. So you don't have to worry about that. It's just that the vritti is focusing towards you and you are illumining that vritti. So when that's happening, there's a real absorption that's taking place in the mind. And then so you're doing that, but then that little thing, and I say just be yourself, then it's no longer about the vritti or the vritti that's focusing on you. It's about you, your self-experience that is self-evident and doesn't require a vritti. In fact, every vritti, every thought modification that you have, right, is known because you are known. Because of the self-evident you, every single vritti that comes into consciousness enjoys consciousness. But the consciousness it enjoys, you know, doesn't belong to it. It is mitya. And so it doesn't, it's not away from consciousness, but it comes and goes in consciousness. I am that consciousness. So just experientially, I am the is-known experience of all of that. So somehow in that ahankara, instead of normally landing on me, and I was very aware of it too, that it's as though it's all in slow motion, like here comes this ahankara, and I'm waiting for it to just land on me. It's just a strange experience. And instead, it landed on myself. You know, and that was very aha. You know, and then I recognized with some clarity, because this other one is not that different, but somehow it made a difference in terms of the nature, the freedom of myself and the freedom, I don't know how to say it. Just the differentiation between myself in a very simple, subtle way. That be yourself. I realized that is me. I'm myself. You know, and myself is Brahman. Myself is not objectifiable. So those are the big, beautiful experiences about in terms of self-recognition. That then you don't lose that, but then you have your raga dveshas and little ones inside, and you know, really it's the raga dveshas on subtle levels and physical levels and all kinds of levels that kind of keep you away from yourself, because it's all, I need this to be happy, I need this to be happy. And so those things are, that ajnanam, habitual ajnanam, is competing with your knowledge in a way, sweeping away your knowledge temporarily. That's why this, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is commenting so much on raga dvesha, you know, to be able to, even to see. Maybe we've been doing that a little bit in the meditations, to just see how subtle the raga dvesha is. It means I want something to be different. Just basically, I need something to be different so that I can be happy, you know. And so that means my happiness has been superimposed on so many things, you know. And the more that you kind of stay with it, you see how thorough, what a web of superimposition is there. It's going to be absolutely complete because you haven't known that satya-mitya relationship until you do. And so that web of superimposition is so subtle, you know. It even goes, even when you're doing the inner child work, their suffering and pain is so much about needing something to be different. And it's just kind of a simplistic way of saying it, but it works. It's not really simplistic, it's just simple. You know, and we can have a lot of fancy words for it and a lot of ways of talking about it, but really, I need something to be different. Even I need my partner to be different, and I need, you know, I need my partner to love me more. I need my parents to love me more, even if I don't have those words, you know. I need them to give me more attention. I need to be more important to them. But as a little child, you won't know about these words. You just feel all of that, you know. But then when you go inside with them now, you kind of know what it is, and you can tell them, and you can make it up to them with this inner child work, you know. And then you can start to, like we started to do a little bit today, just go into that heart energy, that energy center in your heart, and just start to open all of that up and let you kind of consciously work on changing that commitment, where the commitment for the raga is for the source of the ananda, to have your heart be open to that, so that the ananda, that wholeness and that being loved and all of that, is something that your opened, relaxed heart that has been so hurt and so damaged in so many ways and so closed, you know, you slowly, slowly coax it to open into your own being, and your own being you can trust. You can't trust samsara. As good as people are, as wonderful as people are, it's impossible, whether they're parents or children or your partners, or they just can't be perfect for you. It's not always a lock and key. It's impossible. Because even if they were totally attentive only to you. No one else. Not possible to do it. Yeah, not possible. And so once you know the source of the ananda, the love itself, that wholeness itself, you can get your heart, just by coaxing it and being with it, to just open up to what that love itself, to Ishwar itself, to the very self of Ishwar, and to Ishwar itself, or to your Ishta Devata, another trustworthy figure. You know, because the Ishta Devata is not really only Ishwar. It's an aspect of Ishwar. Yeah. So all of these things, you know, you're making a shift. And then you might say, well, if I do that, then I'm not going to love my children or my parents or my partner. And what about my animals? Because I will only love myself. But that's not what it is. Because your heart is free. Your heart has all of that love. You're totally free to love. We're so much more free to love if we don't think somebody can take it away from us. Because that hurt is just too staggering. To have that feeling of being loved taken away is too much, you know. And so then you are guarded, you know, in terms of your relationships and things, because you know from life that you can't count on anything, really. I've been hurt enough times and disappointed enough times that you don't have, you can't, it's impossible to have the same level of trust with samsara, or with a universe that is always changing, than you can have with that which is changeless and is you and will never leave. Right? So you can satisfy that need to just be whole and complete, because that's who you are, that's your nature. And then you can be with your friends and be so available to your partner and love your children, and you know, because you have the freedom to do that. You don't have to hold back, you know. In fact, the only thing you have to hold back is your love, so you don't smother them all. Yeah. But you don't have to be afraid, you know. And you like for them to be free. All that dharma, your dharma works beautifully when you're free inside, because dharma is your nature. The adharma is an acting out of hurt. Even anger is an acting out of hurt. It's just it's a more shallow defense, covering hurt. You know, and so we're all of the time acting out of hurt, even whether it be anger, whatever the emotions are, the adharma, you know. That's why, if you just think of the times when you're happy, it doesn't come up, you know. Swamiji gave an example. I'm just trying to think of that. Where it shows really how strong dharma is, even when there's something for you that's important at stake. It's that, so he was thinking, he must have been in New York City right recently before that, because in this story, you have this young man, you know, in his early 20s, who had gotten a really good job offer that he was so excited about, and he had to go for like his final interview, and it was really a big deal, and he was all dressed up in his good clothes, and it had just been really raining and pouring. It was really messy outside. in the city. But you know, in the city, most of the time you're walking blocks and blocks. You take the subway, and then you're walking a few blocks to get to where you want to go. So he had taken the subway, and he had his good suit and everything on, and he was really kind of nervous and excited. And as he's walking along, he sees up in front this little old lady had fallen down. She had kind of slipped in a mud puddle, and she had fallen down, you know, and she could barely move, and she couldn't get up, you know. And so his feeling was, oh, no, you know, because I have to get to the office. I have to be there for this interview. He looked around. There was nobody there. There's nobody around, you know. And so what did he do? He went and helped her. Because what would you do? You know, it just comes first. He can't just go to his job and leave this poor old lady, you know, hurt on the ground, you know, in the mud. And that's what we do, you know. That's what's normal. That is what's normal. Even though, you know, you're putting yourself at risk in some other way. And that's not what you think about. You know that's happening, but that's not the driving factor. What is the driving factor is that she needs to be helped, you know. That's why people are put, sometimes they do these extraordinary deeds and they're appraised as being such a hero. And so often they'll say, I'm not a hero. I'm not a hero. I'm not a heroine. Not at all. This is just what happened, and this is just what needed to be done. And that's who we are, you know. That's who we are. To not have done that means there would be some such issues inside that were blocking that human response. A lot of pain, or a lot of rage or anger, or some major issues that would cause you to kind of release the pressure by just, you know, that's not normal. That's a response of some deep hurt or anger or something really, really wrong there inside. But otherwise, you'll naturally run to the aid of somebody. You don't even just barely have time to think about it. That's why we are beautiful dharmic people, or Ishwara. You know, that's the human beings. Animals are so beautiful also. So can be so compassionate. If you see some of the YouTube films or on Facebook, I see so many films showing the beautiful compassion that is there in animals. So it's not just human beings. It's Ishwara. Dharma is Ishwara, and I think every being, even the instinctual beings, all beings get this, you know. There's these natural responses that are true to our nature. So there's one other thing that I forgot to tell you, one third thing. And this one was just some Ishwara, I call Ishwara Anugraha, Bhagavan's blessing. I'd only been in India for maybe 4 or 5 months. And I traveled with Swamiji to Ahmedabad. And, you know, I think I told the story once that I saw him for the first time in India, in Bombay right after I arrived. And then I went to Ahmedabad for a week or so, 2 weeks, I think it was 2 weeks, and then went to Rishikesh with him for a month. And then I think, so that was maybe 2 months, and I believe it was from Rishikesh that a group of students, maybe about 10 students in all, caught a train to go all the way down to Madras, now Chennai. That's a long drive, that's a long train ride. It's a, you know, like a day and a half or 2 days on the train. And so we were all in the third class. We all had, you know, like flats that we would lie on. It was like instead of a bunk bed, there were three of them, you know, and so we'd lie on that. And apparently what the doctors think is that I had probably eaten a mango or something, and on the peel there could have been something from a mosquito or something. Anyway, I got cholera. I don't know if you know about cholera, but it's hard to survive cholera. It's really something else. So we were all driving down, and we were about three quarters of the way, and all of a sudden, I couldn't be more sick. Everything was coming out of every end continually, and my skin color, it was even going very dark. And so there was still several hours to go to get to Madras, many hours actually. And so by the time they got there, I was next. I wasn't unconscious, but I couldn't move very well or anything like that. And they had called ahead, and so there was actually a wheelchair and ambulance, an Indian ambulance, an old wheelchair, waiting for me. And when they pulled in, they got me into this wheelchair, and I had no idea I was conscious, but I had no idea really what was going on, now I was just riding in this wheelchair, okay? And so, but as I was riding in the wheelchair, and they had to pick me up and put me in it and all of that, my sense organs, like my eyes were going in and out, and just becoming shh, and then I could see, and then they would go out. And my hearing, everything was just going in and out like that. But now the really interesting thing about this, so I was actually dying, you know. But there was no one inside that was dying. Because yourself never dies. Nothing happens to you. Nothing. And so it never occurred to me that I was dying because I was fine, right? And my mind was too weak to be worried or anything. And these sense organs just coming in and out, I was too weak, I think, to think about that. You know, even though I was noticing it, and I was kind of, it was kind of interesting. The buddhi wasn't that functional. But there was no self that was dying, no sense of that at all, because there will never be. Even when you actually do die, there'll be no such experience, just like the dream, no such experience. So what happened was they got me to where Swamiji was staying, and I was kind of on this little trolley in this ambulance. Swamiji had quite a huge reputation also at that time. And so he came out, he heard I was coming, he came out, and he took one look at me, and he said, "You have to take her to the clinic," where he had three doctor devotees who had just opened about 6 months or a year ago, this wonderful little clinic in Madras that wasn't very far from where I was at that time. And so they sped off because he said, "You take her immediately." They sped off and they got me to this clinic, and then they were somehow helping me to get in. I was pretty out of it at that time. And then they got me onto the bed. It was like a cement kind of thing. In India, they have these cement things with a little mattress on it. They were a thin little thing. So by the time they got me on it, I didn't have a pulse. No pulse, no anything. Of course, I didn't know that, you know. But my experience was I was just me. There was no body, there was no world, there was no nothing. And that was fine. I didn't notice that was, because I was still there. But I had this thought that it just floated through, that it was just me, and then this thought wafted through. Just imagine, just yourself, no body, mind, sense, circuits, no world, a thought goes through. And the thought was, "This is what Swamiji was talking about." That was the thought, you know. And then before I knew it, they had given me, I guess, some, not insulin, what do you call that? Glucose? Yeah, it's like that glucose, intravenously. And all of a sudden, like a huge tidal wave, I came roaring back into the body with all this prana going through my arms and down through my legs, and I was back, you know. So, I mean, who knows what the time was for that? It was of kind of being disengaged completely like that. It was probably like a 3 or 4 or 5 seconds, something, you know. I don't really know, but that's what I would guess. But of course, it doesn't seem like that. It seems like that's just the reality, you know. So then I was back, and they were all working on me, and I was just kind of lying there, and my eyes were open, and they were, of course, trying to do all of these things to make me recover. And I was just lying there totally, just being there and not thinking much, because there was no one there to think too much in that situation. But then Swamiji had been following. The car had brought him, and some of his devotees had come. And then he came in, and I was still just lying there, and he came, and I didn't even try to move at all. I was just lying there, and I looked at him, and he kind of took my hand. And I told him everything that had happened, you know, about the whole thing I told, and I was telling him. And he goes, "Very good." That was very good. That I saw all that, you know, that I saw. So that's good. Since you're still alive, it's good. But then the funny thing was, then they were all going, everybody, all of us, we're going to be staying there in Madras for 2 or 3 days, 4 days, and then we were going to Kuti, up at Hill Station. I think it's Kunur, I think it was. It was a hill station, and it was about 6 hours or so away. We're going to go by train, and we're all really excited about it. And then he started telling me that I wasn't going to be going, that I couldn't go. And that I was going to stay with Sarojini, who is actually, she's an older, but really kind of a good friend of mine. She had a beautiful home and everything there in Madras. You'll stay with Sarojini, give you a chance to get well. And I said, I went like this, "No, Swamiji, I'm fine, I'm fine." And then I went to get up, and nothing moved. You know, I tried to move my head. "See, I'm fine," but I couldn't even lift my head off the pillow. That's how much, that's the cholera, you know. So I ended up having to stay there for about 6 weeks to recover from this. Yeah. And then I joined later. But that was, Swamiji was right. Very good, you know, to have an experience like that. Because, you know, it's not like I was in any position to kind of just be with myself or to meditate and have some nirvikalpa samadhi experience or something, you know, because it was way too early for anything like that, you know. But I recognize that there's no death experience. It just does not exist, which is true. I mean, that's what everything that we say. It doesn't exist. It can't exist. Yourself is not an object within time. So the you that you are is the you will always be. You'll never be touched in any way, you know. So those are the three experiences of the pratyagatma, you know, just that of my own being. And that those aha moments are kind of permanent in nature, but that's a lot different than the total assimilation of being able to surrender your body and mind and sense organs and your raga dveshas and your purpose in life and what am I going to become and all of these kind of things to Bhagavan and just be here, you know. That's the sunrise, you know. So those are my good stories. Yeah. But I think that recognizing Ishwara, we all have our own little stories, but there's lots and lots of them. The slow process of gaining that nishta. You really surrender to Ishwara, not to Brahman. You are Brahman. But this body has such a, the kartritvam, you know, the boat, the doership, the enjoyership, the one who has to make the decisions and make your life work. This one has to surrender to the greater you. Ishwara is only you, not your mind, your body, your sense organs, but it's the natural, you know, infinite manifestation in Swamiji's incidental attribute of your own being, and this body is part of that. So you really are this whole, and the whole you is taking care of every part, just like the whole body is taking care of every part. and all of the laws of the whole body, right, encompass all of the parts of the body, you know. And the whole body will run to the rescue of every part and all of that, you know. And so the whole creation is really in support of every part of it. And the whole creation is not some Ishwara over there that's taking care of me over here. Just like in the dream, there's no me over here and the dream over here. It's everything about me, myself, the self is the self of the creation. But everything in terms of what can be objectified belongs to the creation. It's a good meditation just to see I'm the Ishwara of the creation. I'm the Ishwara of my dream, subjectively. Then you have to realize, and I, the Atma, myself, is the self. I am the Ishwara of this whole creation. But this jiva belongs to that whole creation. And so sometimes you can look at it as you trust your greater self. You trust your infinite knowledge, you know, as opposed to your very limited knowledge. You know, the Ishwara knows best. In this complex situation that we always find, every situation we have is so complex. There's so many people involved, so many karmas involved, so many different wants involved, so many countries involved, so many things. You know, what is best for everybody at this moment? So to just relax and be present to that is really, it's wonderful. Yeah. Mm. Do you want?
Rana, the second story that you had.
Yeah. Moment. Which one was that? I can't remember.
Well, you had some viveka.
Oh, yeah, the ahankara.
Yeah.
Yeah, first one was the self doesn't work, then the ahankara, and then the illness, yeah.
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 Was that during a class, or was that...
No. No, I was just... Actually, I was... I think I was at some sort of a camp with Swamiji, and it was in the forest in Yosemite. Yeah, near Yosemite. We were doing it. We had arranged a camp for him, and we were all staying, you know, about five or six people in these little outdoor-like cabins. And we were there for about a week and a half. And I just, for some reason, there's no reason for it. I was just going to classes as always, but it just was the right time for whatever reason. Yeah, but I wasn't in class when it happened. I was by myself in the forest.
If you've never listened at all to Vedanta, do you think that kind of discrimination could occur like that?
Not with the ahankara. Not like that, but you can have samadhi experiences. But the problem is when definitely, like in yoga, they always talk, there's nirvikalpa samadhi experiences. You don't have to even be a spiritual seeker. You can have that non-dual samadhi experience. But the problem is the samadhi experience requires a vritti. Always requires a vritti. A vritti comes and goes. That means the samadhi experience comes and goes. So then, there's nothing to tell me that I, this body, mind, sense organs person, is not the one who had the samadhi experience, which is now gone. And so no matter what you experienced in that samadhi experience, it's not here anymore. And so there's no shift in the ahankara to the self, because it's still an experience for you, this body, mind, sense organs, you know. So that I don't think that there would be any way, actually, that recognition would have happened.
So basically, because you've been listening
and seeing over and over again, but this particular thing, which it's not like it hadn't been talked about and taught in so many ways, but there's a difference. Like Swamiji could say the same thing, telling in so many different ways, so many different ways, but all of a sudden, you see it, you know, what he really meant. And you don't feel like you don't know all along, you're understanding, but then all of a sudden it's kind of on a different level. And it was like that. Because I knew ahankara, I knew the self, all of these things, I'd been listening for some time, so... I've had all along, I've had those experiences. And after years and years and years, oh, that's what he meant. Mm-hmm. Something he's probably said, you know, a thousand times. Mm-hmm. That's what he was talking about. That's what he meant. Yeah. And sometimes, Swamiji used to joke and say, sometimes, you know, these unfoldments and everything take place. They're taking place and you're listening and you're there. But then, this is his example, but then you'll be in the shower, taking a shower, and then you go, oh, that's what he meant. Yeah. Or so he uses the example of somebody tells you a joke, you know, they tell you a joke, and you don't get it. Okay, you can smile, but nothing is clicked off. Yeah. Then in the shower, all of a sudden, ha! That's beautiful knowledge. You get knowledge, so there's a lot of clarity there. But you know what? That the clarity just keeps growing and growing and growing, and there's like an outreach of connections that are continually taking place. And I think that's infinite, because here you are in an infinite creation. So it's not about the satyamitya that is there, but all of these. All these kind of subtle relationships and understandings, it just goes on and on and on. And I think Bhagavan gives them to us just like little, Swamiji used to say they're like little jewels passing through. Sometimes he'd be laying out, you know, in satsang. It would be at night and there'd be some of us sitting around. And we'd be talking and he'd have some insight, you know. And he would say, Then he said, if we don't write those things down or catch them, they just drift away. It's like these gems, these jewels, you know. Jewels, these beautiful, just subtle little, wonderful little understandings, and they come and we all see it. But if somebody doesn't write it down and do something, then kind of almost like a dream. Yeah. All right, well, we took up our time with that. Should we do a little budget?
Narayana Hari, 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 Narayana Om. Narayana Hari, Narayana Hari, Narayana Hari, Narayana Om. 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 Narayana Hari, Narayana Hari. Narayana Hari, 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 Narayana Om. Narayana Hari, Narayana Om. Narayana Hari, Narayana Om. Narayana Hari, Narayana Om.
Om Shanti.
Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurupyo Namaha. Hari Om.